The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan
on News Talk.
And Nissan talking about EVs there. They have a new EV coming on the market, and we have been talking about them on this show and elsewhere as well in recent weeks and months, as have plenty of other people. Sales gone through the roof, though coming from a fairly low base, it has to be said. But issues have been raised, well, around, I suppose, about range and range anxiety and batteries and infrastructure and costs and incentive and all of that. Another concern that was raised during a discussion on this show last week was about the sustainability of EVs and whether there's a little bit of greenwashing goes on in this world. Geraldine Herbert, the motoring journalist, is with me in studio. Geraldine, is it a fair criticism to raise?
Look, I think there are environmental issues about the way the raw materials are mined, and you can't get away from that. And they may be zero emission when they pull out of the showrooms, but there's a carbon footprint before they get there. But I mean, the car industry is aware of this. They're doing extensive efforts to minimise that. And also, I think the key to all of this is recycling batteries, because then all of that effort that's gone into actually, you know, producing the battery means it has a second life and all of that. It's apparently not a very complex thing to do, but the issue is it's quite dangerous and it's quite expensive as it stands at the moment. So it's very much in its infancy, but I mean, there's great hopes that that will become a proper industry, and that will be all, not the solution, but it'll certainly, you know, minimise the environmental footprint overall of electric cars.
So what happens to batteries at the moment?
Well, I mean, there are people working on recycling them, but there isn't a kind of formal way of doing it. And it isn't, as I said, it's very much in its infancy. But there is most definitely a second life, because, I mean, Derek will tell you this, that I think they go up to about 80% and then they're kind of useless for cars. So 80% battery is still a battery with a long life. So, you know, that's really what we're looking at long term.
Okay, because Derek is with us. Derek Riley is the general manager at Nevo, who helped transition people and businesses to EVs, electric vehicles. So tell me a little bit more about the issues then around batteries, Derek. So
what's happening is once a battery, it has a warranty, could be 7-8 years of life, and then the manufacturer will say we'll guarantee up to 70 or 80% of that battery. After that, then it's used for its second life. It could be for battery storage. It could be used in a building like a home or an office where you might be taking energy from solar panels, and that will actually
store. So sorry, just to explain this to people. So when you say up to 70 or 80%, you're saying if there's a battery and it's meant to have what, 1,000 kilometer range, they say we'll guarantee that after up to 10 years, you'll get what, up to 700 to 800 kilometers range. After that, you're on your own.
Yeah, that's the kind of way. And that's the kind of warranty you're going to get with an engine as well. So they're going to give you a length of distance or a number of years warranty on an engine for a combustion engine. So after that, then you can make the decision, well, I want to replace my battery. Again, another industry that's in its infancy. Or you can take it out and use it for either a conversion of an electric or of a regular vehicle into an electric vehicle, or battery storage. And then after that, then once it gets down to maybe 50% efficiency, you'd start looking at recycling those raw materials back out of it and putting it back into a new battery.
And maybe talk to me a little bit more then about how challenging that process is at the moment, or to what degree that industry is in its infancy, as Geraldine was talking
about. Very much in its infancy, like Geraldine was saying. It can be a couple of different ways. They can use a lot of heat, and again, that's not very good for a carbon footprint, but a lot of it is breaking it down and grinding it down back into its raw materials, separating that out. So a lot of brands like Nissan, like Renault, like Volkswagen, etc., etc., it's taken so much energy to get this material out the ground again, like Geraldine was saying, they don't want to lose it. So they're all starting to look at these recycling facilities and saying, when you're trading in your car, if the percentage of battery is at certain, we'll take the battery out of it, put a new battery back into it, but we'll hold on to that battery because people want that battery for EV conversions or storage. So these batteries aren't being put somewhere into landfill. They're definitely getting second and third life usage out of it.
So, I mean, what do you say then to that criticism of the batteries or of EVs, you know, when it comes to the sustainability issue, particularly around batteries?
Yeah, so the battery manufacturer, it is getting cleaner, it is getting greener. Consumers and manufacturers want to show that from the mine all the way to the raw material, the mineral, that they're doing as best as they can, because consumers want to have that greener choice. They want to make sure that this raw material isn't being mined by children in a mine somewhere in Africa. And so we're calling for it as consumers. Manufacturers definitely want to shout about it, so they're talking about making sure they're not artisanal mines, etc., etc. But like any electric vehicle, it's only as green as the power going into it. So we're not even getting into that. But battery-wise, cobalt will be a large proportion of being used in electric batteries. Manufacturers are getting away from using cobalt, and different battery chemistries are being used to make different types of batteries, like sodium ion rather than lithium ion, etc., etc. But we're getting into the weeds there.
I mean, is this the case then of maybe people forgetting that we're really still talking about an industry in its infancy, Geraldine?
Yeah, look, I think we see more and more car manufacturers trying to control their own supply chain process now and trying to, you know, to ensure that they can verify and stand over every aspect of it. But I think it's worth remembering as well that, you know, internal combustion engines, petrol and diesel, are not without their large environmental carbon footprint as well. So it's not like we went from these, you know, they were nasty on the road, but they were produced really nicely. They're the same, you know. So, I mean, you know, it's not a perfect solution by any stretch of the imagination at the moment, but it's certainly better than what we're replacing. So
Kevin Sharp is on the line, the director of New Electric. Kevin, can you understand people's concerns around batteries?
Yes, of course. I mean, I think, you know, we should all be conscious about the materials, whatever we are using. So it's extremely important to understand the issues, but also to be realistic about, you know, what we're trying to replace, which is the internal combustion engine. And I mean, you were talking there about cobalt, for instance. And, you know, cobalt, whilst it is a feature of batteries today, you know, the biggest use of cobalt is actually in desulfuring petrol and diesel. So, you know, it's important that we understand the realities of the materials that we use in all of our everyday lives.
The sustainability question then, when it comes to the question of replacing a car, Kevin, I mean, it's something that I know some people in my own family. I won't name them. They're listening. They know who they are. Maybe driving kind of a big old SUV. And they suggest, you know what? People can kind of decry my choice to drive this car all they want. But it's whatever. It's 14, 15, 16 years old. And it's more sustainable for me to keep this on the road than it is to replace it with a new EV, given everything that has to go into building a new EV. Do they have a point?
There's a certain value in that argument, and but also, of course, you could, you know, counter that argument by suggesting that we actually take those vehicles and convert them to electric vehicles, which is something that, you know, we've been doing since 2008. So, you know, there are options there, and that's certainly something that government could support. Rather than simply, you know, throwing away these vehicles, we could actually upcycle them. And again, you know, one of the really important things to understand is the batteries that we might use in any upcycled vehicle or indeed in a new EV do have a second life. And, you know, I'm sat here talking to you today using solar power, which is in an EV battery that driven 140,000 miles and was 8 years old before it came to its second life as a solar battery.
So, okay. Explain to me, though, how a battery that was already used in an EV would have a second life in retrofitting an old car. Have you not already depleted the mileage?
Well, yes, but, you know, often, you know, cars get wrecked, for example, and, you know, EVs do that just exactly the same as they do, you know, petrol cars. So, you know, you often find batteries that have very good, you know, maybe 90, 95% of their original capacity. And obviously, you know, last thing you want to do with that is just, you know, destroy it in terms of recycling. What you actually want to do is to take that and give it a second life. And of course, that can go into, you know, an upcycled vehicle, or it could go into a storage application. And I think it's important to understand almost none of these batteries, if any, get, you know, what you might term thrown away. They just don't. They're extremely valuable. And in fact, prices on secondhand batteries are rising, not falling, because there's such a demand for them.
Okay, so Derek, is it about, I suppose, identifying what is the best use then for each battery? So if you've got kind of a 2021 Tesla that has been wrecked, it's been written off, you've got a battery in there that can absolutely be used in another EV. You've got kind of a 2014, 2015 Leaf that's been driven into the ground. You might not put that into another electric vehicle, but as Kevin was saying, you use that in your house then maybe to store something from your solar panel on the roof.
Exactly. It's utilising, because we've the manufacture of the battery, it could be like the Tesla. So whenever, it's nothing to say, but whenever somebody that's an EV driver crashes a car, there's a huge people want to know where the battery is going and where the car is going. Not that we're wishing anybody to crash, but
it's like the ambulance chasers of the EV world.
Battery chasers, exactly. And so, yeah, there's so many opportunities and so many uses for batteries, be that from a crashed vehicle or for an older vehicle. And even that Leaf case that you talked about, 2014, as an example, which an original battery that has depleted itself, that car is still pretty much perfect. And so what you can get is are organisations out there that will upgrade that battery in that Nissan Leaf, because the shell, the technology, everything within the car is perfect. The battery is the issue. And the beauty of it is you can just drop it out, put a new battery in, same size, but they've improved the battery technology. So you're going to get a bigger range. So you'll see these cars driving around the place that might be 2014 on the license plate, but the battery underneath might be 1 or 2 years old.
Kevin, how difficult is that process? Not necessarily the new battery into the Nissan Leaf, which has all of the I was going to say the mechanics, it doesn't have it, but it is all the mechanisms you need to drive with the battery. How difficult is it though to take a internal combustion engine powered car and make it electric?
It's getting easier all the time, and obviously I mean, one of the things we do as a company is we actually, you know, teach people how to do this, because we've obviously been doing this a long time. But it's not a mass market industry by any means at this point. And but it's not especially complicated, I think, because, you know, it's engineering, but, you know, it's quite something that's quite possible to understand. And so long as you understand the safety constraints and you meet all of them, then there are no big issues with it. It's not, you know, I mean, people work, you know, historically, especially people worked on their cars, internal combustion engine cars, you know, and they're much more complicated than an electric car.
You say, though, it's not a kind of a mass industry. Do you suspect it'll ever get to that point, or it'll be just something kind of on the periphery?
It's very difficult to know, because it depends. Obviously, a lot of this depends on whether there's government support for it. But you're beginning to see, for instance, in France, where there is government support for conversions, you are actually seeing companies that are converting, you know, a series of vehicles en masse. And indeed, we do something very similar, but we focus more on the sort of, you know, trucks and boats and bigger vehicles, tractors, for example.
Yeah.
So we do fleets of those. So obviously, the economics of doing a fleet of, you know, say a bus fleet, is much, you know, it's significantly different than doing a one-off, you know, bespoke conversion.
Jordan, Kevin mentioned incentives there. How does the incentive scheme compare in Ireland to other European countries?
It's not that much different, to be honest. Most countries at this stage have scaled back in the same way as we have, so we don't give the full grant to anything. You know, the SEAI grant is only given to cars under 60,000, the VRT relief to cars over between 40 and 50. So that's more or less what the other countries have done. Also, most countries have scaled back on plug-in hybrid grants, we have as well. We've yet to really see what the impact of that in terms of sales will be, because that's only really this year. But yeah, I mean, we're not the most generous, we're not the worst by any means. So we probably have, you know, our infrastructure in terms of our public charging network probably isn't on a par with most countries. That's where we really fall down.
That's probably what puts people off more than anything.
It is, and probably unnecessarily so, because, I mean, I'm blue in the face telling people most of your charging, 80%, in fact, will be done at home or in work. But people still hear those scare stories about, I took a car to Donegal and I got stranded and whatever. So, yeah, I think that's the thing. But I think also people have to realise, you know, range doesn't disappear. I think there's about two or three instances every day of people breaking down on the M50 because they've run out of fuel. So people do it with petrol cars as well. You know, range in an electric car can be managed. You get loads of warning. You're not going to be left stranded. It's very, very rare for people to be at the side of the road.
Derek, what I'm taking from all of this is that, you know, the first electric cars were around decades and decades ago, but in terms of kind of a mass industry, it is still young and still finding its way. And it certainly sounds like, yeah, there's question marks over or legitimate concerns about sustainability on some fronts and the mining of lithium and cobalt and other things like that. But, you know, that there's money to be made, and where there's money to be made in recycling these things, someone is going to work out how to do it.
Recycling them, manufacturing them. At the moment, a lot of our batteries are coming from China, and for battery security, you might start hearing a bit more of this in the years to come. America has taken a stance where they want to start producing a lot more domestically. European Union are also taking a stance with regards to producing batteries within the Union. So there's about 30 or 40 what they call gigafactories, where they're going to be bringing in the raw material, be that sourced in Europe or around the world, and making the batteries here in Europe, and then those batteries will start to filter down. And it's not just bikes, or sorry, cars, it can be bikes, buses, trucks, wherever there's a battery used to move people around, it's the same technology around the place.
All right, well listen, fascinating stuff. Geraldine Herbert is a motoring journalist, Derek Riley is the general manager of Nevo, and Kevin Sharp is the director of New Electric. Thank you all very much for taking part in the discussion. Thank you to everybody who has been with me for the last 3 hours. Thank you to the production team, as always. Off the Baller up next, and I'll be back tomorrow from 4. Have a great evening, folks.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.